It was very kind of a funny day today. I did many different kinds of things today. So, and I the whole day, you know, generally on Monday, no matter what is on my agenda on Monday, everything in me is sort of moving towards class and feeling class, thinking about class, just coming into the river of class. And today, I wasn't really, it's hard to articulate this. Whatever agendas I had for class for this week, nothing felt right. So that was fine. I just, when all else fails, there's always Om Namah Shivaya. It's not a problem. So I just stayed with that sense that it would probably be a very simple class tonight. And then around probably 5:30, 6 o'clock, I get one of those waves of insight or flashes of inspiration, or in the language of guru yoga, an inner command that what I should talk about tonight is the, how can I even put this in words? The arrangement, for lack of a better word, of the mind-body system. And that was a rather interesting thing to think about. So I've been sitting with that ever since. And there's so much I really do want to say on this topic. My thoughts, because this all started coming so late in the day, are not as coherent as they might be when I've given this some more articulated thought. But let me just weave some threads for you and see if this helps you go more deeply into your understanding of the way we operate. You know, it must be because when I sent that reminder last night, I think I put something like operating instructions for new people. So I think my unconscious has just seized on the notion of operating instructions. And when I got this flash tonight, it was just operating instructions for consciousness. So, you know, we talk about the self, we talk about the ground of being, we talk about the inner self is of the nature of Satchitananda, we talk about all these lofty things. And, you know, it's a very subjective system. And these are all really metaphors, right? I mean, we can talk about the chakras and we can diagram the chakras and we can sense the chakras, but they're invisible. There's really no photograph that we can make of the chakras. We intuit them, we sense them, we feel them, we can read all kinds of things that people have written about them and what makes sense we can take into our personal mythology, and what seems like a lot of gobbledygook we can discard. But this is, you know, yoga is much more an art than it is a science. And even the sciences are always recreating themselves. We know this, you know, what was gospel truth 100 years ago has been completely thrown away. So what I'm going to spin out for you here is how I experience this whole system. And I think another thing that got me thinking about this, I was talking to my friend Robert earlier today, and we were just talking about the power of whatever is arising, staying present with whatever is arising, no matter how uncomfortable it may be, no matter how it may not fit with the agenda of what we were wanting to be experiencing in any given moment. I was thinking about that also. So think about this. Think about however you conceive of the so-called inner self. And although when we talk about it, we often talk about it as the ground of being or the core, the essence, that essential light at the center of everything, you might toss that one out and instead think of every cell and just play with the possibility that every single cell in your entire being, the physical cells and the subtle cells and whatever other cells we don't even know about are lurking in this very complex system. Each one contains everything, right? Each cell is a microcosm. And if this hasn't yet been proven, it will be proven. It's like every cell is alive with consciousness, and every cell also carries all the wounding, all the imprinting, all the everything that we pick up as we move through the journey of life. And for people who feel a resonance with the notions of reincarnation, then the cells are carrying a lot more than just this lifetime. So when we talk about opening into the experience of oneness, that experience is in every cell. And if you think about that, and then you think about if every cell contains everything, but our wounding can be quite convoluted and maybe be more extreme in one place than it is in another place, you can begin to see how it gets rather difficult to find that simple pathway into this notion of self at the core of being. Yeah, is this making sense what I'm saying? You with me? If you think about emotion, and you think about the mind, you know, they're very, very different. The thinking mind is let's just go back to, if you think about emotion is a very unarticulated experience that arises in every cell, you know, throughout our entire being. And it's closer to that so-called self because it really hasn't been articulated into anything yet. It hasn't hardened into anything. You know, the self, if you think of the energy of the self, it's this pulsating luminosity. And one of the technical words that I love, that word spanda, the spanda, it's like the rays of the sun. If you think of the self as this sun, and it's a sun, again, it's in every cell. It's not just at the center of being, whatever that is. It's every cell. And coming out of that are all these layers and layers and layers and layers and layers of stuff that ultimately become thought. And that's the reason that thought can be such a problem when we meditate. Because thought represents, it's the hardening of all that spanda that started out in this very just sort of unarticulated, very free, almost liquidy kind of essence. But it just keeps moving and moving and moving and moving and moving. At a certain point, and this is the mystery, and I don't understand, nobody really understands why and how this happens, but at a certain point, what was this very elastic, very fluid energy begins crystallizing into thought, and then thought hardens into narrative, story, the stuff that we use to torment ourselves. And this is why when we have an uncomfortable emotion begins welling up inside of us, we've all been conditioned, we've all trained ourselves, consciously or unconsciously, to cut ourselves off from that discomfort and go into some kind of a hardening storyline. Whatever it is, it could be anything. What would be an example of that? I don't know, I can't think of it right now, but that's what in psychology we refer to as dissociation. And once we've dissociated from the feeling place, we're moving into that realm where everything is hardening into pure narrative. And once it's hardened into pure narrative, we've lost connection to this deeper, deeper, deeper place of being. And that's why when any whatever is arising inside of us, the more we practice staying present with that, even when it's something we don't particularly feel like feeling, it'll open back up again, and we'll find ourselves dissolving back down into that spaciousness. That's one of the qualities of the so-called self. You know, the mind creates duality. The mind creates so much agenda. It's beyond agenda. It's the filter through which we experience our entire life. And it's the filter through which we experience everything and everyone in our life. And most of the time, it's not a very clear filter. Most of the time, it's been pretty fogged up. And this is why chanting is such a powerful and interesting practice, because there's something very mysterious about the voice. The voice is a bridge. And again, I don't understand why it is, but it is. It's a bridge that will actually cut through all the those twisted, as we were talking about last week, places, and open us back down into that pure, spacious openness. That again, it's available in every cell, which is so lovely. If you miss it in one, there's going to be another. It's numerous possibility to touch the self. I was at the dentist this morning, and I was sitting there. You know, they have this chart thing on the wall about your gums, you know, and gingivitis, and how important it is to take care of your gums. And there's a whole thing about the gums. I can't remember now, but something about osteoporosis in the bones from the neck down. Well, it will also happen in the teeth. You know, it's all connected. It's all connected. Even in the dentist's office, it's all connected. You know, bone loss in the teeth. There's also going to be bone loss in the bones. It's fascinating. It's all connected. And so when we chant, see the sounds that we're making, they open everything up. Even if you don't have a great big voice, like I have a pretty big voice, even if your voice is a small voice, that's okay, because it's the right voice for you. And the voice has this bridging capability, so that it may start in that hardened place of thinking, narrative, contracted notion. But if we keep working it, it will gradually open up the inner pathways. And just like that, you'll be there. You know, we talk about mindfulness practice. That's all it is. It's really, it's being present with whatever is arising, which is not very easy to do. And again, it's because all the material in all the cells is always colluding to keep us from that piercing into the spaciousness experience. It's always there. It's always waiting for us. That's the thing. It's always waiting for us, because again, it's available in every cell. So I'll try to make my thinking more clear and talk about this a little bit more over the next few weeks. So think about these things I was saying, and I think it's very helpful to really create your own sense of your process of opening, so you can really pay attention to whichever direction you want to watch from the way the mind, starting with thought, starting with crystallized thought, and seeing if you can slowly open that up so that it just opens into what we think of as pure being, or watch the arising of what will become thought. Just pay attention to that process inside yourself and see what you
discover.